Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Ironically, we got into that meeting and I was literally like just drinking my water and our coach was like, hey, yeah, like DJ's in the lineup. I kind of went.
Let's do this. It's Hot Sheet, Scotty Broad, JJ Cooper, and Carlos Collazo, all from Baseball America. JJ and Carlos, you can check out their coverage on BA's website. You can see their work in emails, newsletters, the whole deal. Subscribe to Baseball America, please. Support the BA fam, and also, of course, subscribe to this YouTube channel for more of this content. And if you're listening podcast-wise, then we do this every single week, including prospect profile segments as well. But today, at least at the start, we are focusing on the draft. We will talk to Mets prospect Jonah Tong coming up as well. But Carlos, you get the rock to start because we're getting close to draft time. I know you're hustling, and we just want to get an update on the top of the draft, including number one for a Cleveland Guardians team that is roaring right now. And they were freaking pumped when they saw that they got the number one pick in the draft lottery. So it's always nice when you've got one of the best teams in baseball right now that gets to pick number one in about a month and change.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe since the last time we chatted about this, I think there's maybe a tighter race for number one. I think last time I was fairly convinced that Charlie Condon was the top player in the class. I think depending on who you talk to, maybe Travis Bezzana is now the guy. In our most recent mock draft, I do have Travis Bezzana in that 1-1 spot for Cleveland. I would say that at this stage, it's not some sense of like extreme confidence I have that Bezzana is the guy. I still think Condon and Bezzana are probably as likely as any to be the pick now. But I do think that Cleveland is a team who's going to keep their nets fairly wide as they go down the stretch. All these top hitters are still in the NCAA tournament, so performance down the stretch could certainly impact their decision. And then with Cleveland as well, I don't think we can ever rule out the fact that they might just hunt a deal at number one in the same sense that the Pirates did with Henry Davis in 2021. There was a tier of five players in that class. They took Henry Davis, who we had at the back of that tier, but at the time you could have argued him as high as you wanted, save $2 million and spread the money around. So I don't really expect to get a lot of conviction in who it's going to be a month out from the draft. Hopefully we find out who Cleveland is really targeting as we get closer. I know all the teams picking behind them are really trying to figure that out, and I don't know who is super confident right now.
The thing that jumps out to me about this, Carlos, is it is close here, but isn't it fair to say at the end of the day, when you're picking 1-1, go with the talent? Like, if they really do think, and again, it's if you think that Charlie Condon, Travis Bezzana are effectively equivalent, then yes, see what's the best deal you could make. But if it is something where the Guardians do believe, hey, Bezzana's a little bit better because of, you know, the infield defense or the hitting ability, or Condon's better because it's more power, there's some, you know, versatility defensively there. Whatever it is, you kind of, at the end of the day, you want to make sure you get the number one, especially for the Guardians. You're not going to pick here very often. You want to get that number one pick right more than you want to save a little bit of money. Fair?
I think that's fair. If I was picking number one, that would be my strategy. I would just take the best player available, the best player my scouts thought was available, but the best player model thinks is available. Whatever your process is, I mean, you're picking in the top spot. You got a chance to really add a talent that a team, like Scott, you said at the beginning, competing at this level, you're typically not adding a talent like a Condon or a Bazana or any of these other guys who are going to go off the board in the top five picks. It's a rare opportunity to really infuse the org with a special talent. I mean, with Charlie Condon, he's a guy whose age maybe is more similar to what you would put towards a Cleveland pick. And then Travis Bazana has the second base up the middle contact profile that Cleveland typically likes. So you can make a case for either one. It'll be interesting down the stretch to see which is kind of the guy, if we do have one, jump into that Adley Rutschman consensus 1-1 spot.
Okay, I have one other question along these lines, though, which is, we don't talk about the draft as far as needs. This is the baseball draft. Mm-hmm. This isn't the NFL. This isn't the NBA. This is not something where it's like, hey, this guy's number one, but they don't need a center. And, you know, so, okay, they're going to go in a different direction, whatever. This is the baseball draft. But that being said, the two guys we're talking about here as the candidates in 1-1 are both guys who could move relatively quickly. They're both very accomplished hitters at top-level college programs. We've seen Wyatt Langford from, you know, move to the big leagues in less than a year. We've seen Paul Skeens move to the front of the Pirates rotation in less than a year. Is there a case to be made here that maybe you do look a little bit at kind of what positional fit, what need fit, power versus hitting, all that, because we are talking about a situation where it's not crazy at all to think that these are this is a pick that could be playing in the Guardians lineup sometime in 2025?
I think that's an interesting topic. Like the fact that people are being pushed so aggressively in the minor leagues seem to just be a little bit different. Maybe that changes it up for teams. I still don't think that that is the best strategy, because your needs today are not going to be your needs tomorrow. Injuries happen. Again, for the Guardians specifically, like any of these players would probably be nice additions to their team. I'm not sure if one secures like some huge hole more than another. I would even think like Condon, the power that he provides is just maybe a little bit more unique compared to what they're typically running out in their lineup. So while maybe that's a factor, I still think that with baseball, with how it works, with development timelines still differing, like Wyatt Langford, he did get there quickly. He's not exactly lit the world on fire so far. Nolan Shanwell, same thing. He moved really quickly, but I don't know, is he an above average big leaguer right now? I don't think that he is. And so maybe players are not going to be pushed as quickly just because we've seen a few, although there are some intriguing arms like a Hagen Smith or Chase Burns that I think could factor in really quickly in the same way that maybe not to the same way Paul Skeens is, but I think it's easier for pitchers than hitters, I would say.
One more quick one for you, Carlos, and then we've got Jonah Tong waiting to join us on Hot Sheet. Anything else we should know about the updated top lists of draft prospects that stood out, whether it was a theme or any player you wanted to pick out that we should keep an eye on?
Yeah, I keep coming back to JJ Weatherholt. I had him mocked number 5 to the White Sox. He's been in this top tier of college players throughout the process, but I think he's a guy who probably is getting a little less hype than he deserves. He might be the best pure hitter in the class. I've talked to scouts who think he has the best swing. You can stack him up right there with Travis Bazana. The batted ball data, the tools are pretty similar, and he just didn't have the benefit of a fully healthy season. And he has one thing that none of these college players or even some of these high school players in the class at the top have, and that's a chance to play shortstop. And if you think he's the best hitting ability with solid power and he's a shortstop, that could be a separator. So watch out for him at the very top of this draft class.
Carlos, appreciate you. We'll be talking almost every week on this show. Thank you.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, Our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Yeah, thanks, guys. See ya.
That's Carlos Collazo. You can check him out on Twitter and also, obviously, all of his articles in BA about the draft coming up. Let's bring in Jeff Ponce, our friend on the show as well, as we are getting ready for our interview with Mets prospect Jonah Tong coming up in just a sec. We'll bring in Jeff, then we'll bring in Jonah right after that. Jonah is a seventh round pick to the New York Mets back in 2022 and born in Canada.
One of the best. Out of
Georgia. What do you got?
I was going to say, if you were saying who had the best April in the minor leagues, you could put Jonah Tong in that list. He was pretty much lights out, first start, second start, third start. And before long, you're looking around and saying, okay, why is this guy in low A? And the answer is he's not in low A. They bumped him up to high A, been very solid, after the jump as well. But this is, if you are talking about pitching prospects who have raised their profile the most, I would say, this year, you got to put Jonah Tong on the list. And I would say this is something I'm looking forward to talking to Jonah about. You could say that about Mets pitching prospects in general. We have our hot sheet, story over at Baseball America today. And that's led by Brandon Sproat, who's another Mets pitching prospect. We've seen Christian Scott jump to the big leagues. We got Blake Tidwell. There are a number of very interesting Mets pitching prospects. There's not been a lot of great news at the big league level, but there has been some good news at the minor league level for the Mets. Sure.
Well, let's get into all of that right now, JJ, and we can ask him some of those questions. It's a perfect intro, too. Jonah Tong from the New York Mets org and currently on the Brooklyn Cyclones. Did you like that intro from JJ? I mean, he didn't even know you were listening yet, but I'm sure you heard it all. Sounds decent, right?
That was pretty sick. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I couldn't do it any better myself. Well, Jonah, first off, thanks for coming on the show. And how's life as a Brooklyn Cyclone?
It's great. It's fun to be back in the Northeast. So nice to see my family coming here and there. So it's been a lot of fun.
What do you think of what JJ said and what's changing right now with Mets pitching development?
I mean, this is kind of biased. I do think we have one of the best development in all of baseball. I mean, from start to finish, like every single person on all our staffs are just, in my opinion, the best. I mean, I can't, you could go on and on about each and every one of them. And there's something about like the group of guys we have right now, which is just truly something special. You guys mentioned a lot of the top headers, but there's also other guys throughout our org that are also coming up.
Go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, I wanted to, ask specifically just year over year, obviously you came out the gates like a turbo booster. The cut ride fastball is kind of, your calling card. Secondaries are coming along. What's really been the progress year over year that allowed you to be ready to kind of take the Florida State League by storm?
Big thing this year was just adding a slider. I noticed last year that like I had two pretty big shapes with my fastball and curveball. And I always had an okay changeup. So then something that was huge for me going to this year was developing another pitch to kind of like to bridge the two. So working with, some of the staff members I had, in the complex and, in St. Lucie, we kind of figured out, the short slider that's helped us a lot, especially in April, as you're mentioning. It helped me just get deeper into counts and also deeper into games.
Jonah, the other thing you mentioned, you said it's nice to be back up in the Northeast. Like you've gotten some time in Florida, you've been in Georgia before, but at cold weather, it feels a little chilly when you got there. I don't think that was going to bother you at all. If you could kind of just explain to people a little bit, if they don't know your backstory, you're one of Team C, as one of our former staffers, Alexis Bernicki, always like to highlight anyone who any prospect who came from Canada. But kind of your path, it's been a little bit unconventional, I'd say, compared to many. But how has that kind of prepared you for where you are now?
So from the cold weather standpoint, I mean, I grew up in Canada, like you mentioned. I remember playing fall ball games when it felt like it was like negative 10 degrees Celsius outside, which I'm not really sure what Fahrenheit is there, but it was
cold,
freezing,
very cold.
When I first got here, I'm like, oh, it feels like home. But yeah, like my story is pretty, like, I wasn't any like top kid growing out of Canada, especially just like, I had a really solid development leading up into that point. And then once my senior year kind of hit, everything started to click slowly but surely. And it's still clicking. Like, I still have a ton of development that I'm trying to work through right now. But yeah, it's pretty unconventional. Started in, where was it? Arizona my last year, then went to Georgia, then went to the draft league, and then eventually with the Mets. So it was quite the year.
Hey, on the development front, Jonah, have you spent time in the pitching lab? I know that's somewhat new for the Mets. I want to say it's maybe like a year or so old. You know, they kind of looked around the league, saw that some of the better pitching development programs, you know, did have a pitching lab. So I saw you smiling. I'm assuming it's been helpful to some degree.
Yeah, some of the numbers are really cool to see, just from like how our weight programs are programmed through like what they see from the biomechanics stuff. But it's all pretty new, so I just see a lot of numbers and I just shake my head. Yeah.
If you mentioned about the new slider, Jonah, but the other thing that does seem to stand out to me about a slider like that is like, that's a pitch that pretty quickly you can really kind of get the control and command of it. It's not just a ahead of the count type pitch, it seems like, for you. Is it also something that's like, hey, I'm struggling a little bit with my fastball, like, hey, this is a way to get me back on track kind of pitch?
Yeah. Oh, actually, that's pretty funny, because that's like one thing I have been kicking myself since like my last outing, which is like, that's exactly why like I designed that pitch, like, or redesigned that pitch, sorry, for that purpose, where it's something I can be able to use either as a strikeout pitch to get back into counts, to fill it up, like, you name it, that's what it was for. So yeah, from that side, it's really really interesting to kind of see how it's gonna shape as the year continues.
Like you said, how easy or difficult is it as you kind of go through now the pro routine, where you have a start to basically chew over good and bad, good or bad, good and bad every week? Like, how much is it like just kind of that building, or is it something where it's more better off to kind of try to put it behind you after a couple of days, even if it's good, to like, okay, I've got, you know, the next one's coming up really soon as well?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's no surprise, last year was kind of a struggle for me, just like top to bottom. So this year kind of prepared me for that almost. So when you have an outing like that, you look at like two things. You go, okay, what didn't I do well and what did I do well? For instance, if something wasn't there, like I got hit around, cool, tip my cap, because, you know, hitters are good. Let's be real. They're really good and hitting's hard. So sometimes you're at the other end of the stick. So for me, I just kind of look at it and be like, okay, this is what I need to work on. Maybe add something a little bit more into my routine, whether that's like some extra mound throws or some like delivery focused stuff. And then just continue on the rest of my week, because you can't really overthink it and overcomplicate it. Because if you do, you're just going to run into like the same like constant loop where like nothing's really clicking.
Okay. To put you on the spot, I have one other question on this, which is toughest hitter you faced this year, but I'm also going to take one away. Because I know you faced DJ LeMahieu this year, and we're going to take DJ, we're going to take the 10-year big leaguers off the table as far as the best hitter you faced. Because I imagine he was probably pretty good.
Are we doing this year, or are we doing like...
It can be the best you've ever faced if you want.
Okay, so the guy who always had my number, especially growing up in high school, was Dylan O'Ray. He's with the Brewers. Mm-hmm. I remember I threw him... So dumb of me to throw him five straight fastballs on the air half, and he hit me out for a homer. I think he has a career like 700 off of me. And then in pro ball, wow. I'd say from this year, a guy named Dominic Patelli. Patelli was pretty good. He has a really good bat to ball. He just grinds out at bat. So he was a guy that I had a tougher time trying to figure out how to pitch to in St. Lucie, but I'm sure that list is gonna change as we grow up. So
I'm gonna do the obvious one. What was it like to face DJ LeMahieu the other day? And do you think a little bit extra about that one? Like, oh, this is a pros pro big league approach that I'm going up against.
ironically, we got into that meeting and I was literally like just drinking my water and our coach was like, hey, yeah, like DJ's in the lineup. I kind of went. He's like, oh yeah, he's doing rehab. So I'm like, oh, okay. But at that point, I'm just like, all right, whatever. Whatever happens, happens. So I remember when he came out to the box and I'm like, okay, do not like overcomplicate it. Just pitch to your approach and, you know, everything's going to be fine from there. So I felt like I really did a good job up into that last at bat where he got a double. I think it was a double or single up the middle off a curveball or something like that. But yeah, I was really happy how I pitched him. And then it was pretty cool after the first pitch. I was like, wow, I used to watch this guy. And then I just had to relock in and stuff like that.
Does that help where you're like, yo, I can get big league hitters out? No big deal.
I mean, I really don't pay attention to it like that, but it's definitely cool for sure.
Yeah. Okay. So tell me about, you know, something you're doing off the field. Give us a little insight about Jonah off the field. Because also there are some minor league teams that reside in sleepier parts of the country that, you know, close shop at 8, 9 o'clock and all of that. I mean, I spend a lot of time in Brooklyn. You're in Brooklyn, man. So do you get to do anything fun at the very least, hit some good restaurants?
Okay, so I tried a pizza shop when I first got here. This is my third week actually being in Brooklyn, so I don't have a lot of experience. Yesterday I got a haircut from a place that I don't even know what it was called. I had a lady cut my hair, which I thought was funny, and I just didn't know what to do. And I started walking around and I'm just seeing a lot of concrete, and this reminds me of like a bigger Toronto. I have not yet taken the subway, which I am like kicking myself. I need to go do it, but it's kind of like one of those, you just got to push yourself into it. So, as bad as this sounds, I really haven't done a whole lot. So I'm looking forward to doing that on our next up day, our off day.
Okay. I like that. Maria Hernandez Park. You can write that one down, especially, hey, minor league salary. Yeah. Put it in your head or put this back somewhere. If you get out to Bushwick, you can find some really, really good food spots and even kind of like shacks. People set up like homes with food that they make, like from whatever country they're from. It's incredible. So balling on a budget too, because I'm not going to necessarily give you the fancy Brooklyn spots until you're in the show. So I like that. Well, great having you on, Jonah. We really appreciate the time, man. This was really good. You're an awesome interview. Keep doing your thing. Good luck. We'll keep tracking you, all right?
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Jonah Tong, New York Mets pitching prospect and current Brooklyn Cyclone. I mean, you know, JJ, I mean, he's not just a prospect. He's a prospect in Brooklyn. It does give you a little bit more to do. It is a little bit challenging always. You'll hear from the Mets prospects who are like, it's expensive. It's New York City still. It's not Manhattan, but it's one step away from that.
Well, and that's one of the ways that things have changed a little bit now. Like it used to be that San Jose Giants or another one but back then, you know, 5 years ago, housing wasn't necessarily covered. Now is something where wherever you are across the affiliated minor leagues, your housing is taken care of by the team. So you don't have to worry, especially when you're a guy like Jonah who gets promoted. And it's like, hey, by the way, I have to find a place to live in Brooklyn. No, nowadays, thankfully, that's something where there are team apartments where you get plugged in. But it's hard to believe, but it wasn't that long ago. 2019, that was not necessarily the case.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's a big improvement for the minor leaguers. Okay, let's take a little trip as we get to some prospects that have already spent time in the show. If you're listening to the podcast right now, the name of the segment is Holiday Adventure as we give you our Jackson Holiday update. He has picked up the pace a little bit lately, Jeff. So we're going to run through some Orioles prospects and a few other names, too, that either got called up or sent down. But let's start with Jackson. What do you have for us?
Yeah, I mean, over the last 10 games or so, Holiday's numbers have been really good. Over the last week, that series, if you just sort of isolate that series, he's hitting over 400 over the last week. And had some extra base hits as well. One can, you know, walking at an extremely high rate. That's nothing new with Jackson Holiday. Still striking out at a high rate, though. That's one thing that I think, despite the slash nine numbers, we're not really talking about. He's still running that 30% strikeout rate. That's something that's been pretty consistent dating back to spring training. I think it's still an issue, kind of breaking down some tape this week, talking to some hitting coaches. I think everything that Jackson Holliday is dealing with right now is totally fixable. But I think if you watch the swings, you can kind of see that front foot drift out. And what that's allowing him to do is he's sort of missing in terms of, like, it's not timing as much as it's just location of where the barrel is. And I think a lot of it is him trying to overcompensate for power. And just some adjustability in the lower half, I think, is something that he needs to fix. Be a little bit more direct to the ball. All stuff that's really fixable. Maybe he's starting to work into that a little bit. But the swing and miss still being there is a little concerning because it's not something that we had seen previously with Jackson.
That's kind of the thing, Jeff, that stands out to me about this is I kind of worry, again, short term. These are not long term worries, but short term, is Jackson trying to be a little bit something that's not kind of his calling card? Like, I think the best version of the 2024 Jackson Holliday, maybe not the 2028 Jackson Holliday, but the current Jackson Holliday is the guy who really has very advanced at-bats, you know, very advanced approach, draws the walks, hits for average, and has that power that he kind of sporadically gets to. And it does seem like it's a little, it's a little bit more kind of a power-based approach right now, isn't it?
That's really how it feels to me. When I saw him in spring training, I think we even saw some of the videos, the Holliday hacks, which is a lot of fun to see him, his dad, Ethan, out there. Obviously, he's a big 2025 draft prospect as well. Thing is, both those guys are big humans and they're power hitters. Jackson is not built like his dad. And, I think you're right. I think the identity of him just as a hitter, even when we are talking about 2028 Jackson Holliday, it's a guy that gets the bat and the ball, spreads it around. He uses his legs. He's a really intuitive and smart base runner. I think just a smart hitter too. We're still seeing the approach. We're still seeing the pitch recognition. It's just a matter of, his swing not getting to the locations he needs to get to on a regular basis to, make the kind of contact he needs to. He's a guy that I want to see, 23% line drive rate. I don't care as much about the fly balls, but spreading the ball around, stinging it up the middle, and letting his legs do some of the work there too with the extra base hits. I think that's the best version of him. He's an excellent base stealer. Doesn't need to be a power hitter, but if he's a guy, and I think we thought this coming into the year as a number one prospect, he's a guy that gets to 2025 home runs in his mid to late 20s and does that consistently for a few years. You're totally fine with that. You want him to be that dynamic leadoff hitter type. And I think that's something that would be a big benefit to the Orioles as well.
Hey, Jeff, we also had a former first overall pick just get sent down in Spencer Torkelson for the Detroit Tigers, and he's coming off a 30-plus home run season. He's been struggling defensively, at least if you're looking at most of the metrics right now, too. But, the bat was really struggle city. So we see here second lowest OPS among first basemen in MLB history. This tweet from Justin Spiro, one spot ahead of Howie Schultz, a basketball player who played baseball during the NBA's offseason, just emphasizing how much he has struggled this season compared to what he put together last year, which was a slightly above average offensive season last year. It's a first baseman, so you want even more than that. I think he was around a 105 OPS plus, but what do you think of Tork getting sent down?
Yeah, if you had told me when I saw Spencer Torkelson on the Cape, Chatham Angler, you'll like that.
I do.
As a freshman, Pac-12 freshman of the year, was one of the most famous freshmen in the country, probably one of the most famous freshmen I've seen on the Cape. I never thought that barreling up and hitting for power was going to be a major issue for Tork. That really has been the major issue. That's been the part of his game that's been missing, is the impact. It's a really low barrel rate. I think I looked at it before we jumped on. Forgive me if I'm not right on the nose. I think it's around 5%, which is pretty bad. Even his average exit velocity, which is a number we always look at, but 88 miles an hour for, a number one overall first baseman that was a prodigious power hitter in college, that's just kind of not in line with what we anticipated. And I think, it's in some ways kind of confirmation bias for me, because I've been on this kick lately kind of questioning whether, top of the draft, top 10 college hitters are really as safe as we think they are. And this is kind of an appropriate year to have that conversation.
That's what I was going to ask you, Jeff, kind of speaking of you kind of teeing it up. I'm now going to kind of place the ball on the tee even a little bit more, spin the label to you and say, hey, Jeff, since you have written about this recently, what have you found when it comes to, we have guys like Nick Kurtz. Nick Kurtz is a really good first baseman defensively, really productive hitter at Wake Forest this year, considered part of that top 5, top 8, really top 8 tier eight or nine tier of prospects in this draft. But when it comes to, when we talk about bat first guys, Spencer Torkelson, Andrew Vaughn, guys who are first base or maybe first base and you squint and say he can be a left fielder, it's pretty bleak in the 21st century at the top of the draft, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is. I think if you look, especially, you know, we did a podcast recently kind of going back to 2015, and we were calling out these names in the top 10, and it was actually even doing my research and then kind of going back and talking through it, it was remarkable how poorly a lot of these hitters have performed. It almost feels like with the first base college guys that we might have more high school first basemen that are performing now with Josh Naylor. Like, it's just, it's really unusual, because I think that was always, you know, the old cliche is that college hitters at the top of the draft, you're drafting a major leaguer there. You know, maybe he won't be a multi-time all-star, but he's probably going to be an above average hitter and someone who's really productive. And especially if there's not a lot of positional value, we've just seen over the last decade, that has really not been the case. And now you factor in the college run environment and maybe some other questions come up about equipment, et cetera. I think it kind of muddies the waters a little bit, just in terms of, you know, how much impact are you really getting? You might be getting a major leaguer, but you may not be getting, you know, that Chris Bryant, which I think, you know, years ago, that kind of became, at least over the last 10 years, that kind of became the prototype of like what you want at the top of the draft with your power hitters from college. And we just haven't seen another guy like that really.
All right, so I want to finish the show with two promotions and two demotions, and you guys can comment off of this. So Connor Norby called up by the Orioles. He had the Jorge Mateo injury. So Norby's up, another Orioles prospect to add to the mix here with the big league club and see how he fits in. Also, Justin Henry Molloy called up by the Detroit Tigers. And there were a few demotions over the past week or so, but you know, two that we're pointing out here, besides Torque, Reed Detmers sent down, former first round pick, and Edward Julian, who looked at least at times last year like he was just going to be a big league regular, and he was sent down as well. So JJ, any thoughts you want to throw in there on any of those guys?
I'm going to start with Julian, because I do think that, as crazy as it may have seemed, considering where we were this time last year with Eddie Julian, I'm not shocked by it from the standpoint of just this is a situation where he does seem at times a little bit lost the plate. Defensively, I got to give him credit. He's gotten better at second base, but he's second base only. Second base, first base, no other position. And with Royce Lewis coming off of the IL, he's basically losing out to guys who have more positional versatility. And kind of, if I wanted to give an optimistic bent on this, he's losing out kind of to Jose Miranda, who was Eddie Julian last year, had a good year 2 years ago, was sent back down to AAA, had some shoulder issues, I think, last year as well, had to kind of regroup and figured it out and back in the lineup again this year. So there is kind of a sign of, hey, what do you hope you see here? What you hope to see is a guy who goes down to AAA, gets on a roll again, and comes back up just like a teammate of his, Jose Miranda, has. But I do think the fact that he doesn't have as much defensive versatility as some of those other guys does play a role in this.
And Jeff, what about you from the notes that I listed? You want to pick out one or two?
Yeah. You know, and I'll just add on with Julian. I think that whenever we're evaluating prospects, it's always something that comes up, especially when guys are really productive in the minor leagues. And that is, you know, when a guy is second base only, first base only, you know, it puts a lot of pressure on the bat to be able to produce. Second base, there's a little bit more value now with, you know, the lack of shifting and things like that to be strong defensively. And, you know, he's historically had some major split issues. So, you know, I think when we look at that, those are sort of things that kind of don't give me any question marks. The Reed Detmers one, I think, is probably the most interesting. I mean, he's obviously really, really struggled this year with a lot of high hopes. I think coming into the year, I was among those that thought this guy was maybe poised to be a breakout pitcher. It's not a bad environment, obviously not a great team around him, but he's really sort of disappointed. And I think that, you know, when you start to take a look, maybe in a few years, the way the Angels have handled all of these top of the draft players that they've picked, college players over the last couple of years, I think they've really done them a disservice just from a development standpoint. And even Detmers probably had a little bit more time in the minors than some of the guys recently, particularly on the position side. So, you know, I think it is, you know, it's definitely an indictment, I think, on their process in terms of player development, that this guy who seemed like he was, you know, so ready and just has never really gotten over the hump to be what I think he could be. And I think it's another one of those situations where there might be another dozen organizations out there where this guy ends up and, you know, might be a number two or number three pitcher. If the guy ends up with the Mariners, I think we're talking differently about him.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, we see prospects get called up quicker than ever, but at the same time, there is a line. The Angels have certainly been tiptoeing that line with many of their call-ups in terms of timing. And it is certainly not a great farm system if you look at the results and the prospects there right now. We'll get to more questions next time around on Hot Sheet. It was a busy day. Thanks, Jonah Tong, for joining us. And look out for a new Top 100 on Wednesday on the BA site. Make sure you subscribe to BA, support the prospect world that they provide for you, and we will see you on the next Hot Sheet.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.